You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. Sure, every job has good things and bad things about it, but what could be that great about studying garbage for a living or spending weeks on end strapped to a bed in the name of gravity research? Well, for 4 years, Popular Science magazine has come out with a yearly ranking of what it calls the worst jobs in science. This one is written by Jason Daly with illustrations by Chris Gall. And joining me now to talk about the jobs, and maybe you have a job of your own. I mentioned before the break, if you've got a really terrible job in science, a laboratory, wherever you work, we want to hear about it. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Mark Janot is editor-in-chief of Popular Science, and he's here to talk with us about this issue. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira.
Whose idea was this, anyhow?
it was a sort of collective eureka moment, I think, about four or five years ago. We were sitting in a conference room, you know, brainstorming ideas, and someone mentioned the notion of doing, you know, a classic sort of rundown, the best jobs in science.
Right.
And I think we all sort of yawned collectively and said, oh, God, the best jobs in science. A, people are going to expect that to be actually objective in some way, or they're gonna expect there to be a sort of rigorous selection process there. And B, you know, the best jobs are all going to be kind of good in similar ways. But
yeah. But
maybe there's a different way to go about it. Maybe we could do the worst jobs, and oh my God, that's brilliant,
it.
You know?
So you hired a blue ribbon panel of experts to come in and judge, right?
Yes. Well, that first year we hired a tremendous freelancer named Speed Weed.
Is that right?
Who, no kidding, and he contacted a thousand or more scientists and science professionals and researchers and drudges and whatever, and took as many nominations as he could. And then we just put it to a vote, basically, of our staff. There was truly nothing scientific about the ranking, especially. Well,
yeah.
About any of it, really.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, come up with some really noxious, horrible jobs that cast some interesting perspective on science, and we'll vote as a staff on which one's the worst.
Right. Let's go to some of your picks. Your top 10. Give me your number 10 pick.
Number 10. I love the fact that this is number 10, which means there are 9 worse jobs in this. This is the whale feces researcher.
Ooh.
These are basically scientists who trail along behind right whales out in the ocean, waiting for them to do their jobs so they can, you know, scoop it up, get their big pooper scooper out there, and then analyze it to study the whales themselves in an obviously much, you know, non-invasive way.
Right.
It scores high on the smelly,
yuck factor
scale, which is
almost
a guarantee. Yeah. Every year there's some very high scoring yuck factor jobs in our list.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but, you know, like almost every one of these jobs, there is legitimate and important research going on here. And, you know, as like most of the rest of the jobs also, the researchers themselves are incredulous when they hear, you know, when they get a call from us actually suggesting that they have one of the worst jobs in science because they think it's
right.
Tremendously. I guess the smell of the salty sea air is great until they get up on their prey, you know.
Well,
and then they captured on film recently the first time they think that they actually got a whale fart on film. It formed a big bubble and then popped, and then you can imagine the smell of that.
Must be number one on YouTube.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking of one, let's go right to the number one job that you have.
Number one. Well, you'll see a trend here. Number one this year is hazmat diver. These are highly trained divers who go into basically they swim through sewage. Enough said. They go through sewage. They swim in nuclear reactors and toxic waste spills to clean up the waste spills. There was the worst example that we found was a guy, a hazmat diver, who had to dive into a trough of pig excrement that someone had fallen into and died, and to retrieve the body, basically.
Oh,
so then you've got, you know, death, rotting corpses,
wow.
And
wow.
pig poop to deal with all at the same time.
1-800-989-8255. Jen's from Minneapolis. Hi. Have you got a job as bad as that?
Actually, my job right now is very good, but I used to have a pretty poor job. Not quite as bad as swimming in poop, but I got to weigh it in little dishes and put it in the oven.
And to what end?
I was working for the sewage treatment plant in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it was gravimetric analysis of the sewage at every point to determine the solids that they were taking out of the water.
Right.
So you would weigh the sewage and before and after drying.
Wow.
And before and after burning it.
Did you have to have special clothing for this?
No.
You weren't going in with your flip-flops on, I don't think.
Special gas masks, perhaps?
No funny clothes, really. It was pretty much a lab job, but it stunk pretty bad.
Nothing to protect you from nature.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you don't have that now. Part-time job, I was hoping.
Yeah. I like what I'm doing now a lot better.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
1-800-989-8255. Let's work our way up down again from 9. Let's see number 9 on your list.
Number 9 this year, forensic entomologist. This, of course, is sort of a sexy job, I suppose, these days with CSI being so popular. But, you know, entomology, as you well know, Ira, is the study of bugs. And forensic entomology is the study of bugs on corpses. So
right.
It's sort of like two great tastes that go great together or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You get to hang around rotting corpses. And I found in this year, the guy that we interviewed, that Jason Daly interviewed, really proves to me that it takes an entirely different breed of human to do this. I mean, the first guy that he ended up working on, he was a detective at the local police department called him because he knew he was an entomologist, had studied bugs, and he said, you know, I've got this corpse. I really need to figure out when he died, whatever.
Right.
And the guy, it turned out, was a guy that this guy knew and had breakfast with regularly. But he just got so into it. He was like, wow, I found some maggots in his eyes. And then then in his mouth. And, God, it was so cool. You know?
Right. Is this okay. Neil Haskell? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
I think we've had him on the show.
Well,
years ago. Yeah, this is a great pick, I think. Because I can't think of that. They have a laboratory where bodies lie around in the backyard, sort of. And
right,
decay
exactly.
There.
They let them decay. They use pigs also, I think, to study so they can compare. I think pigs and humans
PC
decay.
May not be PC anymore to
same.
Use. Real bodies, but they used to use real corpses in different positions. So, that's a terrible job. Any of these, as you say, could be number one.
Yes, exactly, We often get into, you know, debates and fisticuffs in the office. Different people have their job that they're advocating for.
Let's see if somebody on the line. Hi, Eric in Madison. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Hi, go ahead. What is your worst job?
Well, I actually... I make penguins puke in Antarctica. I study the diet and foraging behavior of Adélie penguins on the Antarctic Peninsula, which entails me making them puke.
Isn't that against the law or the treaty or something?
No. It's all sanctioned by government agencies and all the appropriate permits, and it's all in the name of science.
I'm not going to ask. Oh, I will ask the obvious question. How do you make a penguin puke?
Well, part of it entails me sticking my finger down their throat.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's not that great of a smell when it comes up either.
You must have to hold them pretty tightly to get to do these emperor penguins?
These are Adélie penguins.
Adélie penguin.
Yep. Yeah, you kind of hold them like a football or like a bagpipe under your arm. And you kind of, when you stick your finger down, you kind of give them a little squeeze with your elbow.
Just to help things come up.
Right. Yeah, gotta assist them. And so what do you learn? What their diet is, obviously.
Right. And actually what we're doing is we're looking at how their diet has been changing over the last 10, 15 years because of the global warming and the sea ice has been declining down there, and their major prey base, these shrimp, these krill, have been moving and have been changing also. And so that's kind of what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. How long did you have this job for?
Oh, I still have it. I just I was down there this past January, and we'll be going back again this coming January for another couple of months to start all over again.
You're just refining your technique.
I am. I'm getting it down pat.
So you are a true specialist in what you do then.
I think so.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you, and have a nice trip down to the ice.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
I'm taking notes on these. You know, we're doing our research for next year here on the air.
I don't think you'll ever hear somebody say that they make penguins puke.
I know. It's not one we had come upon and then rejected because it wasn't good enough.
You could sit around a table, think, you know, brainstorming, but there are some things that just...
Yes, truth is far stranger than brainstorming.
Let's go to number 2 on your list.
Number 2, working down from the top. Oceanographer. Now, this is in the grand
You wouldn't
theme.
Think an oceanographer.
You certainly wouldn't. And every year, there's one or two that kind of fall into this category of jobs that you would expect to be tremendous and that for certain reasons, are less tremendous as you than you would think. In the first year, we had astronaut. You know, many people would think that's the best job in the solar system. But because, A, many astronauts don't even make it into space. They have to suffer tremendous indignities and centrifuge training and all this stuff. And they have the risk of getting killed and whatever. That made our list. Now, oceanographer, you know, this is the in the category of, you know, spirit breaking. You know, you're a passionate scientist who's an oceanographer because he loves the sea, he loves sea animals, and every year it's just more doom and gloom. And basically, you are the messenger and the discoverer of how bad things are getting. You
Another
know?
Dead coral reef.
Exactly. The coral reefs
Another
are, you know, going to be
fishing
rubble.
Ground gone.
Exactly.
Drag nets scraping the bottom.
Yep, and you feel like, I mean, obviously you wouldn't do it if you didn't feel like A, the research was important, B, the research you're doing could have an effect, and obviously one hopes that it will, but day in and day out, the discoveries can be quite soul-sapping.
You wonder what the rate of people going to, you know, into therapy is.
Well, we had I think it was our second year, one of the jobs we had was similar in a way. It was veterinarian.
Right.
And it was the reason for this was that you get in, veterinarians get into it. It's lab animal veterinarian. It was number three in 2004. Lab animal veterinarian. You get into, become a veterinarian because you love animals.
Right.
And then, but when you want to get into research because you're serious about it, you realize that you've gone from making animals, taking sick animals and making them healthy. To make taking healthy animals and making them sick or killing them.
All those mice you have to do away.
Yes, and worse. So and we had people quoted in there saying that, yes, it does lead to, you know, psychological, you know, therapeutic intervention necessary. It can be spirit-crushing in some ways.
All right, let's see who else we got on the line. Let's go to Caleb in Jamesville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi there.
I'm definitely not going to top the guy with the penguin poop. Wow. Or the penguin, making the penguin throw up. I'm sorry. Wow. When I was a freshman at the University of Arizona, I was a microbiology, you know, going for my bachelor's in microbiology. And I got this great job in a laboratory. They were studying nitrophorin fixation in rasping insects. I thought it was fascinating. When I went in for the first day, they told me that what I'd be doing is cleaning out the containers where they stored the media that they grew E. coli in, but I'd be cleaning out the ones that went bad.
Ooh.
Ooh, nice.
Ooh, what?
Yeah.
What a discovery on your first day of work.
Oh, wow. Every day when I got done with work, my eyes were watering. You know, my throat hurt. I came home. I couldn't do it. I had to quit the program and go off and do something else. It was terrible.
What did that pay, that job?
$7.50 an hour.
Minimum wage.
I thought you were going to tell me it was free and it was something you had to do for your coursework.
Well, they did invite me to the lab meetings, which would have been great for, you know, the whole learning experience thing. But after about a week, I decided it really wasn't for me, you know.
Wow. Wow. And you're doing something better now, I hope.
Well, I'm in IT, so I guess.
All right, Caleb, thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about the worst jobs you could have in science on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News with Mark Jeannot, editor-in-chief of Popular Science. It's this month's issue called, it's got a picture of a dive from space on the cover, but the article is about the worst jobs you can have in science. And if you've got one we want to know about, our number 1-800-989-8255. Some jobs here. Let's go to Todd in St. Louis. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Hi.
Good. I guess I kind of consider my job a job of science. I operate a company called Traumatic Cleanup and Restoration. I clean up homicides, suicides, and natural deaths.
Hmm. Oh, my goodness.
That does not sound fun.
How do you steel yourself for this? I mean, do you remember your first day on the job?
Well, yeah. The first one that I ever did was I think it was a 14-year-old kid whose girlfriend broke up with him, so he shot himself in the chest with like a .357, and he had an arterial bleed, so he had an adrenaline rush, so he jumped up off the couch, ran throughout the house, until obviously there was no more blood to pump out.
If you're in California and you're eating lunch now, this is...
Yeah, we won't get to the part with the maggots until after lunch.
Okay. And so your job is you go to these crime scenes and you clean them up.
Right, right. And I think the worst jobs there are probably decompositions where someone's gone unfounded for, say, 4 to 6 weeks. And then by that time, the flies are probably as big as dragonflies. They've got a pretty good food source. The odor is unbelievable. Many times we have to tear out drywall, carpet. If it's a wood floor, we have to completely remove the floor. We have to completely remove the source of the odor, obviously, before we can attempt to get the odor out of everything else, which it permeates anything that's porous. So anything that's in a house is basically ruined. We do run ozone generators to try to help mitigate the odor. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Just every case is different.
With all these crime scene shows on television, have you ever seen one that looked realistic enough for what you've seen?
You know, I tried to watch CSI a couple of times, and no. It's just going in and seeing it on my level, it's really hard to watch it on TV and say, oh, this is great, this is so real, because, I mean, they do a good job, but for the person that's not used to going in there and seeing all this, I guess it's great. I mean, the show has great ratings, but for me, no. It doesn't do anything for me.
How does one get inspired to go into this line of work?
Well, I, by trade, was a funeral director, mortician, and just going on various calls to remove bodies, people asked me probably 50 times, who can we call? Who can we call to do this? Because a shotgun under the chin is like sticking a stick of dynamite in someone's mouth and just lighting a fuse. It's just an explosion. It's all over the ceiling, walls, floors. You name it. And one day I just said, hey, I can make some money doing this. So I've been doing it for 12 years.
Well, Todd, I never thought I'd say this in earnest, but it's a terrible job and somebody's got to do it. So
that's right. And every time I do a job, 99% of the time, the person always says, well, we didn't know anyone like this existed. Well, yeah, and you hope that you don't have to use me again. But we have had repeat customers, believe it or not. Only a couple of times, but unfortunately some families have had a couple of suicides.
All right, Todd, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
If you've got a job that can you top this hour on Science Friday with terrible jobs?
Bottom this.
They're hard to really, to bottom them with Mark Janot, Editor-in-Chief of Popular Science Magazine. Stay with us. We'll take a short break and come back and see if you can bottom this. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note on Monday's Talk of the Nation. When it comes to food, we're basically foragers. Soil Neil Conan, an author of Wasteland, on reasons why we grab fruity pebbles instead of fresh fruits and what you can do about it. We're talking this hour about the worst jobs in science with my guest Mark Janot, Editor-in-Chief of Popular Science, with their July issue, which features a rundown on 10 jobs they think are especially bad. And we're topping those today.
Yeah, not as bad as the listeners out there.
Go ahead, Mark. Give me number three.
Number three, elephant vasectomist.
Oh, gee.
Separating the boys from the pachyderms.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't pay to make a Randy Bull pachyderm angry.
No.
Well, which is why they use a dart to sedate them before they do this. But down in African wildlife parks, the elephants have been breeding too quickly and eating up more than their fair share of the surrounding habitat. So they've decided that they want to sterilize at least some of them. So they get out these, they sedate them, then they lift them up by a crane, cut open some incisions, and the vas deferens in the elephant is a centimeter thick.
Hmm.
And so they use a big scissors in there to cut a couple inches out of it, and then run as fast as they can the other direction before the guy wakes up.
1-800-998-8255. Heather in Tucson. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Hi there. Have you got a terrible job?
Oh, well, not anymore, but years ago I used to have a job rendering roadkill for an archaeological lab. They wanted to get the skeletons for their comparative collection, so we took things out of the freezer that people had collected over the last few years and boiled them in a pot with detergent and then basically pulled everything apart with our fingers because we didn't have much equipment in the lab. We were changing buildings, and they'd taken all the equipment with them.
Wow.
Well, you know, that job was on our list the first
really?
Year.
Is that right? That was on yours?
It wasn't a roadkill, but it was a carcass cleanser for, you know, specimens that would, you know, they wanted the skeletons for natural, you know, history museums or whatever. Right. And everyone had their own way of doing it. They had beetles that would eat away at the carcass. And
were not that sophisticated.
You know. Yeah, well, I like your can-do spirit.
Well, I'm now a forensic anthropologist, and I've spent a lot of time in mass graves and pretty fresh ones, including one that was under a pile of pig manure. And I can tell you, rendering roadkill's worse.
No kidding.
Wow.
Do you remember there was a book out about 10 years ago about how to recognize roadkill by its silhouette? I can't remember the name of it. I think that followed the book where how to recognize what bugs were splattered on your windshield. I think it followed. Anyhow, that was the worst job. Wow, I can't imagine that. Thanks for calling, Heather, and good
luck.
Glad you did it and not me. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's move up from number four, from elephant vasectomist to a little better than that one.
A little better. The margins here are very small in some cases. Garbologist is number four. Now, this is not – we didn't come up with the name garbologist. William Rathje of Stanford University calls himself a garbologist. He is a guy who, with his students, sifts through tons and tons of landfill garbage to, you know, discover things about how we as consumers, consume things and what does or does not, you know, decompose fast or slow. My favorite thing that they discovered was that there is a correlation between cat ownership, which they decided had to do with litter, you know, they found litter in the garbage, and National Enquirer readers. I mean, I don't know that actually overturned anyone's expectations.
Well, the Enquirer was not in the cat litter box, was it?
No. But I guess right nearby, you know. This is important research that's going on out there, Ira.
This is important research. 1-800-989-8255. I think there's so many jobs here. Maybe we'll do a blog on this today, and we'll get more people who could not submit their jobs. Let's go to, I think, the last time we have John in Fort Wayne. Hi, John.
Howdy. When I was in college, we had a local meat packer, and you had to transport the blood from the meat packer to the people who rendered the meat or the waste and made blood meal. And you'd have to fill 50-gallon drums half full of blood so they could put them on these trucks. And it all got collected in this tank, and you had to actually scoop this out, and then it had to be inspected by the inspectors to make sure it was clean because it was a food processing plant.
Wow.
But you had to scoop blood, put it in these tanks, and you also had to take the guts that didn't fall down the chutes and go into the tank or into the 50-gallon drums properly. You had to shovel those with pitchforks.
Wow.
And it was not an exciting job.
All right, John. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Take care. I want to thank also Mark Janot. Thank you for coming by, who is editor-in-chief of Popular Science. And their July issue features a rundown of 10 jobs that they think are especially bad. And they're never as bad as the ones we've gotten here today. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure.